Tony Mac and the Triplet. With your hosts Antonio McBeth and Aaron Triplet. Specializing in the world of sports.
I think they're the best team in the country.
Covering your favorite teams.
Alabama wins!
Touchdown over!
And talking about whatever the hell they want.
Because he's a good coach. The good talent wants to play for him.
Absolutely not. This is ridiculous.
Now, here they are. Tony Mac and the Triplet.
Welcome in, everybody. Wonderful Saturday morning. A little rainy outside, a little dark, but it's wonderful because we're live. It is a fantastic Saturday because, that's right, Tony Mac and the Triplet live back in the studio. It's definitely been a few weeks. It has been a little while. I've already shaved and regrown a beard. That is a fact, not just trying to be funny. Aaron has grown a beard as well. Getting ready for the NHL playoff, I guess. Well, a friend of mine wants me to grow out a Ryan Ellis type deal. I don't know if he's ever seen the beard I can grow. Not really going to be. I can grow a good beard, but I can't grow a hockey beard, I don't think. That would take me a long time to do. These guys have so much stuff pumping through them naturally that they can grow anything. Aaron, surprised with what Aaron's been able to grow. It's impressive.
I'm not too impressed with it. I actually don't remember the last time that I shaved. So I'm just kind of like, well, this is probably the longest that my beard's ever gotten, and I kind of don't want to get rid of it. My wife's kind of hounded me about it, but I'm just kind of like, whatever.
The weirdest part about your facial hair is you have this weird streak going straight down from
right
your
down
chin
the
to your
middle,
neck.
And it's actually filled in over the years. When I started to be able to grow any kind of facial hair was after I graduated high school. And it was about my second year of college. I had, this beard, and it wouldn't connect right underneath my chin going down to my neck. And it was like I'd shaved that one spot, but no, just hair didn't grow there. And now it's filled in a little bit with just a few more hairs.
When it gets long enough, you can just kind of comb it over on that spot. But I got a couple bald spots on mine as well. When it grows long enough, you can cover it up with the long hair you have. But how does it feel to be back? I mean, it's been weeks.
It's been a month because I actually looked at my – because I save a lot of the preparation I do for the show on my iPad, and I just date it. I just say, today's is March 24, and I looked in the last one. It was February 24 was the last time I was in here. I had a couple things going on. But it's good to be back. I'm pretty excited about it. We had a pretty good in-depth conversation kind of about the kind of things we were going to talk about today last night. And
I got a good show coming up.
Excited about it, yeah.
We definitely have a fantastic show. We are going to have the two-minute drill coming up here in just a few minutes, tell you the biggest stories of the week. We're going to talk about those a little bit as well. We have sort of a millennial type deal. Aaron's going to bring up a little later. He found it this morning, a different kind of bracket. Everybody loves brackets this time of year, so we found a different kind of bracket. It'll be fun. It's something millennials grew up with, and it's something that parents might have had to put up with their children, parents now. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Can't wait to get into that. I don't want to spoil what that is. But we've been wiped out because, like we said, Aaron had some stuff going on, and we also have some NCAA stuff. The tournament wiped us out last week. And if it's going to be this kind of basketball, this kind of college basketball that took care of us and was the reason we couldn't go, I'm okay with that because the first weekend of this tournament was absolutely unbelievable. And then, on top of that, the Sweet 16, the second weekend of this tournament started yesterday, and it was fun too. I mean, we didn't have necessarily buzzer beaters, but the first day we had a lot of intrigue with some high seeds. High seeds as in like 9s and 11s, that kind of deal, and coming down to the wire. Games, good finishes. I mean, there were even some blowouts this weekend, or so far Thursday and Friday, but they really don't seem to bother me all that much like they have in the past because of how good this tournament's been so far. So no complaints out of me. I'm glad to be back, though. I absolutely love doing the show. We got a couple people out there that they tweet every week asking when the show would be back, and we're back now. So I hope you're listening, Garrett from Huntsville. Let's get into this thing, Aaron. First off, Aaron, before we get into the two-minute drill, tell everybody because I can't stop looking at it. It's beautiful. I've seen it before, but I love this shirt. Give your Aaron Triplet shirt of the week.
Yeah, I need to go in and tweet that out. It's Memphis, the Memphis Tigers, the big M with the tiger coming out of it logo. I'm actually going to Twitter right now to tweet it. Yeah, this is one that I found in Cassia, Nashville. We go to, when my wife and I go, we go to the big mall, and they have a the Lids locker room is there, and they always have good deals on shirts. And a lot of times they'll have, you know, $2 for $25, which when I see $2 for $25 of team shirts, I'm all over that.
So let me ask you something.
Can't pass that up.
You being a t-shirt guy, you are. Have you got your UMCB shirt yet?
I have not. I need to order it, like you, because I remember you ordered it the night of the upset, and I was kind of planning on to do it as well. But I still, I want to. Of course, if I'm going to buy one online, I'm going to make sure that I'm going to really like it, because there's a certain really kind of shirt that I have to find to really really like it.
I'm going to let you know right now. You have a better chance of getting your shirt if you order it soon. You have a better chance of getting it before I do. I haven't been charged for mine yet because I got on right after the upset. I ordered it. And I got a confirmation saying that we see your order, and once it's been processed, that's when we bill you. And soon after, the bookstore crashed.
Yeah, the website crashed because so many people got on.
But I mean, can you blame them? I mean, that we'll get into that too. I mean, that's all a part of the show here in just a little bit. But wow, and the shirt's fantastic. It's the yellow, and then it's got the black letters and the incredible retriever. I remember telling Tom Abraham right before this tournament started, when we were given the field and given our predictions, I told him, I said, Tom, it's really unfortunate that UMBC has to play Virginia in the first round because they're the retrievers, and that's really cool. That's a mascot and a nickname you don't see very often. And it sucks that they have to play the one seed in the tournament, and that worked out well for the retriever, the Chesapeake Bay Retrievers. So I guess they're not complaining. But I really would have loved to seen them pull it off against K-State. They had a chance. That was a ridiculously ugly game. See, I'm talking more and more about the tournament, but I need to give it a rest because that's going to be a good, decent chunk of the show. So, Aaron, without further ado, let's get into it. Let's start with the two-minute drill. That is the best recap in radio.
Now, it's time for the best recap in radio, the two-minute drill. 2 minutes on the clock. Number four.
In case you didn't know, the former Alabama defensive coordinator was hired as the next coach of the University of Tennessee in December, Jeremy Pruitt. It was one of the wildest coaching searches in recent memory, with more fan involvement than you can think of. But just how much were these fans involved in this coaching search? Tennessee released documents earlier this week that included tons of various text messages from fans to then-athletic director John Curry, the majority of which were negative and degrading, especially following the supposed hiring of Greg Schiano. These messages included one fan texting Curry the words, "You're trash," for 8 straight minutes before switching to "You're garbage." The coaching search even goes deeper than that. Washington State coach Mike Leach and North Carolina State coach Dave Dorian were also on the list, but Curry was warned once again to steer clear of those names. Curry was also messaged individually by the likes of Brady Hoke, expressing his interest in the job. Curry was also aware of the interest of former LSU coach Les Miles. The entire situation really is difficult to comprehend. Overall, the Tennessee fan base was expecting a home run hire like John Gruden. Anything less than that was unacceptable. In my opinion, who would even want to coach at Tennessee amongst all this chaos? Jeremy Pruitt, one of many Nick Saban disciples, has his work cut out for him as this offseason begins. Because he has to go up against both teams who played for the national championship this past year. And every year, he's going to have to match up with these two teams. Georgia with Kirby Smart and Nick Saban at Alabama. He has to play. And one of them, Alabama, Tennessee has not beaten since 2006. So a long drought going there. A lot of chaos in this coaching search, a lot of fan involvement. We'll see how it pans out for Tennessee when they have unrealistic expectations.
Number three.
Nick Saban did his Nick Saban thing on Tuesday and kind of, sort of, not really addressed the quarterback situation. It came up, but as predictable as possible, Coach Saban continued to state that it is an open competition and that he's annoyed that Hurts doesn't get a fair chance and that we assume too much, yada yada. It's classic Nick. Then we get a story that might have legitimately evened out this competition in our heads. Tua, the Crimson Tide savior, your cousin and mine, was taken to a Birmingham hospital where we were originally told it was a sprained thumb. Turns out Tua broke his index finger on the follow-through of a pass that ended up with him connecting with the helmet of an offensive lineman. He underwent surgery and is expected to be throwing again soon. I'm going to let you guys be the judge here, though. Is this a story or a non-story? Does a broken index finger even up the competition between Hurts and Tua? Before the thumb, was there really a question who would start? How annoyed do Bama fans truly get with Hurts after seeing what Tua was able to do? Now that he may not be the clear-cut starter, is Tua still my cousin? The reality is Alabama's schedule is soft until November, so we will likely see both of these guys get a lot of reps. Then, the more productive guy will play the important snaps against Auburn and LSU. My advice? Don't put too much stock into figuring out who the guy is. No matter how much you want it to be one guy or the other, we all know Saban, which means we all think Tua should be the guy starting from day one, but we know the respect for what Hurts has done will keep him in it until it truly matters. And that means until one of these guys lets the situation get away from him, just like the national championship against Georgia.
Number two.
Football season may be over, but there has been no lack of excitement in the NFL involving things such as free agency and trades that have happened in recent weeks. After the Chiefs confirmed a trade with the Redskins way back before the offseason began, they sent Alex Smith to Washington, D.C. in a big trade, so it was inevitable that Kirk Cousins was leaving Washington. So, the Kirk Cousins sweepstakes officially started then, and it's been all in the news since. Cousins is probably the biggest quarterback name in recent memory to hit the free agent market. Ultimately, the Cousins sweepstakes were won by the Minnesota Vikings, with Cousins garnering a three-year, $84 million all-guaranteed contract, making him the highest-paid player in NFL history. But this was not the only thing that happened. The Niners also inked Jimmy Garoppolo for the second highest contract in NFL history, just behind Cousins. And this isn't all. The Bills sent Tyrod Taylor to the Browns while signing A.J. McCarron. The Cardinals inked Sam Bradford to a one-year deal. Case Keenum found a home in Denver. And Teddy Bridgewater signed a deal with the Jets, coming off his knee injury. The quarterback landscape has changed so dramatically this offseason in the NFL, with more changes coming on the eve of the draft. Quarterback changes aren't the only thing going on in free agency. The Packers released wide receiver Jordy Nelson, who was signed by the Raiders, but in return picked up tight end Jimmy Graham. They also signed defensive tackle Muhammad Wilkerson. The more interesting bit about the Packers, however, is Aaron Rodgers, who was waiting on the terms of the Cousins contract in order to renegotiate his deal. He's in line to sign a $90 million all-guaranteed contract. These are only a few of the major moves made this offseason, but when our favorite teams take the field in December, it's going to be drastically different. As you can see, the NFL never sleeps.
And finally, number one.
The NCAA tournament's Elite Eight is finally here, and on one side of this deal, you have the Blue Bloods running the show. Kansas and Duke, the 1 and 2s from the Midwest, have a showdown on Sunday to keep the pristine reputation of who runs this tournament alive. Above them in the East, it's Villanova and Texas Tech. These matchups don't necessarily make you jump out of your seat, but it's how these particular teams got there that has contributed to this tournament being so much fun. But it's the South and the West where the majority of the intrigue comes from. Two 9 seeds and an 11 seed have made it to the Elite Eight. There is a guarantee that at least one 9 will make the Final Four, and the 11 has a great chance as well. Forget your bracket for a second. This is exactly what we wanted, right? A sport with a parity that has led to a ridiculously unpredictable tournament. The upsets are one thing, but the amount of close finishes we have seen already is what makes it worth it as well. Now, with two sides of the bracket being so different, we find out what kind of people you, the viewers, are. Are you the thoroughbred blue blood cheerleader? Or are you taking the scrappy Ramblers of Loyola Chicago? They do have Sister Jean on their side. Well, they did until they busted her bracket by advancing to the Elite Eight. Or are you pulling for K-State or FSU? Two 9 seeds, but come from elite conferences. Either way, I haven't seen a tournament as intriguing in a long time. This needs to become the new norm. The upsets are nice, but it's how close the majority of these games have been that hits the spot. Whenever a blowout has happened, I haven't been nearly as bothered by it as I have been in the past because these competitive matchups seem to outweigh the dominant performances. Playing an entire regular season of 30 games just to get into a one-and-done tournament doesn't fit a whole lot of sports, but it fits college basketball just fine. Keep it the way it is. Now, Aaron, that's been a discussion in the past. Tom's brought that up a few times, talking about how college football has it right with how they do things and how the world of college football and the NFL is different and better because of it than college basketball. And I don't necessarily agree. I mean, the playoff format for college football and the NFL fits that sport just fine, and it's not always perfect. But I think what we do in college basketball works for that sport just fine. I mean, there are a couple things that are weird, just like in everything else. Like, who's the SEC champion? Who do you think the SEC champion in basketball is?
I don't know. It's odd. They put so much emphasis on regular season championships, and it's such a – all the coaches at least seem to think that that's where they'd rather win, at least John Calipari, because he doesn't like the SEC tournament because he feel like at times it doesn't benefit certain teams. He said when they were unbeaten, the play in the SEC tournament didn't benefit them, and he also feels like, you know, the NCAA tournament seeds the teams before they really even play the conference tournaments. But yet, the conference tournament determines your automatic bid. For example, right, when Monmouth lost their conference championship game in the conference tournament a few years ago after beating USC in the regular season, having some good wins, they didn't get in the tournament because they didn't win their conference tournament.
Thanks a lot, Syracuse.
And so there's a lot of gray, and I don't really know what to think about.
See, it's not perfect, but
it's not. But I enjoy conference tournaments.
I do too.
Thoroughly enjoy them.
My point here is that the system in any sport's not perfect, because trying to figure out who you feel is the conference champion is a little different because you had two regular season champions in the SEC and then a totally different SEC tournament champion. But the road to the national championship goes to the tournament. You play this 30-plus game regular season, early, you know, non-conference tournament at the beginning of the year, all that stuff, and then your conference tournament. And then you get all of that is to – when you win your conference tournament in football, you're most likely going to a playoff. You're going to like a 4-team playoff. Now, you just – like Kentucky, for example, they won their conference tournament for no reason. They were already in the tournament. It helped their seeding a little bit. But they did all of that work. It used all of that endurance, a lot of time, 30-plus games, just to get into a 68-team tournament to compete for a national championship. And a lot of people find that a little weird. I think it fits the sport perfectly, because we've seen even back in the 80s and the 90s that parity in college basketball is alive and well.
And basketball is a tournament sport. You play well, you're playing well at the right time, anybody can beat anybody. Because, and see, I've gone back and forth with this. I've used this argument before, you know, against football, saying, you know, people who love upsets in college basketball, if it were to happen in football, they would hate it. And I used to believe that wholeheartedly those people are hypocritically wrong. But the more that I've kind of, you know, I haven't really, I've modified my opinion slightly. I think that you can enjoy both for what they are, but at the same time, football is so much more. Football's the ultimate team sport. It really is. It is the ultimate team sport.
I agree with that.
Basketball is, there's 5 people on the court at all times, and they're all pretty decent. Everybody who plays is a pretty decent athlete, at least at the college level, regardless if you're UMBC or Duke. You know, if you step out on the floor, 9 times out of 10, or even 19 out of 20, or 99 out of 100, Duke's going to beat them. But if UMBC or whoever it is shoots the basketball well, you know, if you're off the least little bit in basketball, you can get beat by anybody. Right. And if somebody's on. In football, that won't happen. I mean, you see upsets happen as far as like FCS or smaller schools like that beating the big schools much rarer than it happens in basketball. And that's just kind of the way it is. And if you were to have it to where, you know,
I think it's just the way the sport's designed.
Yes, very they're just different, and they're and yes, here's kind of the way I think about basketball. They play, you know, the 30 plus game regular season, and it's the most insignificant regular season in all of sports.
Absolutely, I agree with that. They can cut that. They can cut that shorter, in my opinion.
You play all these games. You play this tough schedule just to get into the tournament, and you're poor Virginia, and you get beat. You're on the wrong side of history there, and that just kind of happens that way. And you look at all the great teams. Basketball is a sport where the best team rarely wins the national championship. Or not rarely. I would say it happens often, but not every year. I mean, UConn was a 7 seed, won the national championship.
Because you can have one guy get hot with a hot hand in basketball. Like you said, basketball means it's not nearly as team dominant as football is. Like football, you can have a wide receiver that's really hot. You know, he's going to beat his guy every time, or he's going to have his guy beat. He's going to catch any ball thrown his direction. But what are the chances that the ball gets thrown his direction every time? Because the quarterback not only has to be on his game, but the left tackle, the center, everybody has to do their job. In basketball, it's not the case, because you're not having someone block for your quarterback that has to get the ball to you. You can go one-on-one with somebody and take them that way. And that's why I like the argument of in basketball, you can't do this. You can't say, okay, you put Tom Brady on this team. Take Tom Brady and put him on this team, or Peyton Manning and put him on this team, and will this team win a Super Bowl? Probably not. It just depends on all the pieces you have around you. In basketball, totally different. You take LeBron James and put him on UMBC, they're probably in the Final Four. You know what I mean? It's just a totally different dynamic, and that's why I think it works for college basketball. I would rather see a shorter regular season. I don't want to see the tournament change. I don't want any more teams in the tournament. I think we've hit our sweet spot there. The playing games, I think they could tweak that. The sport's not perfect, but I like the path of the national championship. I like the tournament. I like the madness, and it's justified. It's not just fun for us to watch, but the teams that win are usually justifiably good. I mean, Syracuse, a couple years ago, like you mentioned, they beat Monmouth out of the tournament. They didn't play them, but Syracuse got in the tournament over Monmouth and went on a Final Four run. That's a team that, if there were 67 teams in the tournament, including this year, Syracuse as well, if there were 67 teams to get in the tournament, Syracuse wouldn't have been there, and they were in the Final Four. You don't see that justification in football all that often. Ohio State made the playoff the first year when they shouldn't have made it. Maybe shouldn't have made it. There's arguments that they shouldn't have, and they went on to win the national championship. But they were still a top six, top four team in the country when they did that, and the argument was between them being four or being number five. In this instance, you're talking about putting a team in that maybe they're one of the best 67 teams in the country, maybe our top 40 teams because of all these automatic bids. Maybe they're a top 40 team, maybe they're not, and they can still go on a run and make the Final Four. It's totally different. You'll never see the 40th best team in college football come anywhere close to a playoff, come anywhere close to beating a top five team two times in a season, something like that. If they might do it once, and it would shake up the entire ranking and the entire year of college football that we see. In basketball, it happens all the time, and the sports are just two totally different things. That's why a system similar to football and basketball just wouldn't work. It wouldn't be as fun. Because basketball is a fast, progressive sport where you got to have things like this. You can go a couple days in a row. The tournament thing works. I love it.
And, I mean, you had several years ago, of course, when UConn won the national championship the first time with Kemba Walker in the Final Four in Houston, when it was – that's the highest total number if you add up all the seeds in the Final Four that there's ever been. UConn was the highest. They were a 3 seed. Kentucky was a 4 seed, Butler was an 8 seed, and then VCU was an 11 seed. So that was really unique, and it was funny because that's one of my favorite tournaments ever, probably up until this one, because this one has been fantastic to this point. But the ratings in those Final Four games and championship game they plummeted in comparison to some of the other ones. And I hate that because I feel like that raises the intrigue, but yet it – and that's just for, I guess, me as a fan and my personal preferences. But that really takes a shot at the intrigue for a lot of normal fans, because they want to see the Carolinas and the Dukes and the Kansases. And in my opinion, even as a sports person, I've seen enough of those three teams.
Right. I agree with that, but I'd like to go back and look at that tournament as well and see how competitive altogether that tournament was. Because
I don't remember like as far as like you know right. how many close games there were, how many shots beat the buzzer and all that. As far as, you know, get right down to it, every game you have on the edge of your seat, this tournament has been that, especially on the left side of the bracket in the South and the West region. It feels like every game's coming down to the wire.
So I kind of feel like whether it was Blue Bloods or not Blue Bloods in our Final Four this year, I feel like the ratings would be really good based on what we've seen in the tournament so far. And that's why I'm curious. I do agree that the majority of those ratings back then probably dropped because it wasn't the teams people were familiar with getting in. Totally agree with that, but I bet part of it has to do with the fact that the tournament might not have been as competitive as we're thinking back on it, because I remember that championship game being a snooze fest.
It wasn't like one team set. UConn didn't really pull away from Butler until the end, but it was so ugly. The shooting was so poor. I want to say it was like 21-16 at halftime. It was
22-19. I remember it because it was the exact score of the football national championship final. It was one of those where nobody's hitting a shot. It kind of reminded me of the K-State UMBC game from the other day, where it's a really low scoring, you go 4 minutes without scoring, nobody's hitting baskets, and then someone will pull up and hit a three and go at 4 points with like 6 minutes to go, and you realize, okay, it's over. Nobody can hit a shot anymore. It's over. It's done. It was one of those games. So I think that might have something to do with it, the competitiveness of that tournament. But think back last year. I mean, I didn't have fun watching that tournament at all.
No, last year was miserable. I mean, we had one buzzer beater last year, one, and it was Chris Chioza for Florida against Wisconsin in overtime, which I remember watching that game because I remember, you know, how close that game was, because that was one of the best games in the whole tournament, was Wisconsin and Florida
exactly.
In the Sweet 16.
See, whether it's Loyola Chicago, which they've hit three shots in the last minute to win three games.
I mean, they've won three games by a total of 4 points.
Right. Whether it's them doing it or whether it's Kentucky last year, you know, getting beat with Luke May hitting that shot or something like that. I don't care if it's Blue Bloods or not. I want a competitive tournament.
I agree.
Makes it better for me.
And a couple years ago, you know, we had, you know, it was one of the most, when the one that Syracuse went to the Final Four, and I know Oklahoma went to the Final Four that year as well, but as a whole, that tournament was so boring.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
The Final Four stunk too.
I mean,
North Carolina stomped Syracuse
and Villanova stomped Oklahoma.
Beat Oklahoma like they stole something.
So. I don't remember. I think Wisconsin may have hit a buzzer beater, but until Chris Jenkins in the championship game, there wasn't much to – at least they ended that tournament well.
Right.
You know?
I agree.
But
we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we might have a little crying Jordan face of the week for you. Stay tuned. Tony Mack and the Triplet right here, 730, 1039, The Ump.
730 and 1039, The Ump. More sports.
Welcome back. Tony Mack and the Triplet here, 730, 1039, The Ump. Off to a fantastic start this morning. You guys can jump in and contribute to make it that much better. 866-485-9867. That's how you can call in and speak to Aaron and I directly. That, again, is 866-485-9867. That's how you can call and weigh in. You can hit up the Twitter window at Tony Mack Triplet. You can go to the bio of at Tony Mack Triplet and find my Twitter individually and Aaron's as well. I am at Tony Mack UMP. Aaron is at A Trip Tennis. That's how you can get at us. I followed on my latest tweets. In football, the physical makeup of the team is much more important. It's much harder to beat bigger, stronger, and faster. I agree. And that kind of goes to what I was saying earlier, but that's the physical makeup of a team entirely, a complete team. I mean, you can have one big physical dominant running back and he wasn't really big, but he was dominant. Back in the 80s, Oklahoma State had Barry Sanders. Barry Sanders almost single-handedly beat Oklahoma that year, but Oklahoma won. Barry Sanders dominated, and he was ridiculously impossible to stop, but Oklahoma had the bigger, better, more physical team. Maybe not the player. They still lost
four games that year.
Exactly.
Three or four games
that year.
That's
the point. You can have a dominant player. It's about the dominant team. Think about all the Heisman winners that never won championships. I mean, Derrick Henry did win a championship as the Heisman winner, but how dominant was he in winning the championship over his entire team? It was a great effort by the entire team. It wasn't just Derrick Henry. You know what I mean? It's totally different. One dominant player in basketball goes a lot farther than as far as the win column and towards a championship goes than in football. It's all about the team in football. So I follow my laces. Absolutely agree with that. I'm so glad we're on the topic of football, because we do have our crying Jordan face of the week. It is the Tony Mac triplet version. It is not mine. It is not Aaron's individually. It is ours together. It is the show's crying Jordan face of the week this week, and I think everybody can join in on this. Aaron, oh boy, I know you're a teacher, and you're out there on spring break this week. So you had a pretty relaxed week. Well, over here on the sports radio side of things, let me tell you something. It has been hectic, and a lot of the conversation has been about the guy who made our crying Jordan face of the week, and that is intern Butch. Butch Jones not only got hired by Alabama, he's a friggin' intern. He is an intern at Alabama, a guy that was the head coach of Tennessee, Alabama's rival, is now the intern for Coach Saban. He will never again will Saban have to get his own little Debbies. Never again will an Alabama Crimson Tide team be without orange slices. Will they be without water? Because they can look over their shoulder and know that intern Butch, their best friend, has got him. How degrading and embarrassing is that? I mean, Butch is gonna play it off like it's not. That's for anybody else that looks in on this, that's embarrassing.
I mean, I think that Butch Jones has already looked embarrassing in the rearview mirror with, you know, Champions of Life and
he's a freaking intern.
Five Star Hearts.
He's not even good enough to be considered a respectable position. He's not even like an offensive assistant or an analyst. He's an intern. Five-star intern. With a five-star heart.
Butch Jones, I think, holds the record for most appearances on the Crying Jordan Face, or at least references to him or references to his team.
He will win Crying Jordan Face of the Year. He will. I mean, of 2017, we'll just go ahead and give that to him.
Yeah, it's just, like I said, I'm kind of lost for words.
It's hilarious.
Here.
It's hilarious when you think about it. And it's just his demeanor and how he's carried himself and how funny he can be. You know what I mean? Like, as soon as they introduce him as the intern, they come out and say that, you know, he's not allowed to coach on the field and stuff like that right after Tua hurts his thumb. So you can already make the jokes that intern Butch hurt Tua. You know, it's laughable.
I mean, if I was him, I'd have taken my buyout money that Tennessee gave me and kind of just retired.
He's like that friend that you have around. That friend you have around when you're younger that you know doesn't have other friends and you rag on him. You rag on that kid because you know you can rag on that kid, and he sits there and takes it because he likes being your friend. That's exactly what Butch Jones is doing. He is that friend. He is that friend that gets made fun of and takes it because he knows he has no other friends. You're his only friend. You're really not his friend. You have him around to kick him around, and he knows that, but he also knows this is the best he can do. That's exactly what he is, and it's hilarious. And he has earned every bit of it, by the way.
Yeah, he was not a good hire as a head coach.
And, oh no, absolutely not. But if you're Alabama, great job. And Nick Saban, I doubt Nick Saban did this on purpose. I hope he did. But you just trolled Tennessee so freaking hard. You said the guy that comes from Tennessee, the guy that was your head guy that came from your university is only good enough to be an intern here. But my defensive coordinator is good enough to be your head coach. Your head coach was only good enough to be my intern, not even an analyst. Or an assistant. We call him an intern. But my defensive coordinator is your head coach. Fantastic.
And like I addressed earlier in the two-minute drill, nobody wanted to coach at Tennessee. Pruitt just took an opportunity to be a head coach in a major program, which, I wish him good luck, but that's a task. It would take something special to turn Tennessee around anytime soon.
Oh, man. Let me find it again here. At Bama Bob 2014 tweets in, yeah, but Butch is good at multitasking. Garbage pickup and Mason work. Falling on my laces gets back in. Somehow you've made me feel sorry for Butch Jones. Well, you should. You should feel sorry for, because he's sitting there and he's taking it. And he knows. He knows. I mean, obviously, you don't want to cross Saban and be like, no, I'm not an intern. I really do this. But my goodness, you know he sees all this stuff. There's a Twitter handle for intern Butch UA, and it's fantastic. There's a couple of Twitter accounts trolling Tennessee against Alabama, and it's all because of Butch Jones. Like the Twitter that's out there about so-and-so days since Alabama's beaten Tennessee. There's a Twitter handle for his trash can, Butch's trash can. And now there's one for intern Butch. Honestly, you should feel sorry for this guy. I do. I mean, he's still making a lot of money, I'm sure, getting paid out from Tennessee. He's working. Tennessee is paying him to be an intern at Alabama, is what they're doing, which should hurt Tennessee fans even more. It's one of those things where now that Butch Jones has gone from Tennessee, I know Tennessee fans have been doing it for a long time, but now that he's actually gone, it's gone past the guy, I want this guy out of here. Now that he's out of there, any chance you get to take a shot at him, you do it. Because he's earned it himself. I'm still beyond belief. And for whatever reason, I can't remember the name of the quarterback he had there, but one of the he's got a bunch of records in college football. Aaron, it'll probably pop into your head in a second, but it's unbelievable to me that when you look at what Butch Jones did at Tennessee and how he limited people like Alvin Kamara, and you go back and you look at his track record at CMU, he got to coach Antonio Brown. I can't remember the quarterback.
LeFevre.
Yeah, there you go. It was
Dan LeFevre.
He had both of those guys. And then he went to Cincinnati. He went to Cincinnati and did pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, he was decent, and it happens that way sometimes. Some coaches aren't meant to be on that big stage program with all that pressure. Then they coach better in a smaller environment, you know? I mean, sometimes that's just the way it is. Some aren't cut out for the big stage, and Butch obviously wasn't.
He has found his perfect fit in college football, and that is oh my gosh. Nick Saban's little biatch is what he is, and it's beautiful. Bama Bob gets back in. Wonder how many times this year Saban gets Butch to take the press conference questions. He's going to be the guy that points. Yeah, next question over here, that's going to be Butch Jones. Yeah, right here up front, that guy back there. Oh my gosh. The fact that it's Nick Saban that designated him as intern, but the fact that Butch Jones, someone who was a head coach, can allow somebody to call him an intern, it's got to hurt. And I just, it just makes me lose respect for the guy again. I want him to be better. I want him to get back in things, but I don't know. I mean, if you're an athletic director and you're looking for a head coach and Butch Jones' name keeps popping up, he wants to go here, he wants to coach here, do you let him? Because you know your fans, wherever you are, especially at the FBS level, at a Power 5 level, they're not going to be for that, are they? I can't imagine so-and-so, whatever university, or the university of whatever, has officially hired Butch Jones as their next head coach. That fan base will be trending on Twitter because they will be outraged.
Yeah, if I was a program, I wouldn't want Butch Jones as my head coach.
So is he out of the head coaching game? I mean, how long until he gets another head coaching gig? And will he ever coach another Power 5 school? I don't think so.
Kansas?
That would be... Why the hell not? Why not Kansas? David Beatty's at least doing things okay over there at Kansas. He's trying to turn the culture around. Butch Jones would go there and you would get exactly that. At least there's a little hope that they'll win 3 games next year. With Butch Jones, there is not that.
That would be a hire that Kansas would make. That we'll just leave it at that.
They had, what, Charlie Weiss at one point? And...
Well, that was one of the worst hires ever, and I feel like they're still paying him.
Who, Kansas or Notre Dame?
But I know for a fact that both Notre Dame and Kansas were paying Charlie Weiss 2 years ago, and he was like the third highest paid coach in college football, and he wasn't even coaching.
It must feel really good. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap up this hour, and then the next hour we'll get into a little bracket that we're excited for. And there's a certain top 20 athlete, or top 20 most dominant athletes, inspiring athletes, whatever. I can't remember all the adjectives used to describe it. We'll get back into that. But we're gonna touch on that at the top of the hour because the top three in this list made me really appreciate it, and then after that it just kind of crumbled to crap for me. So we'll get Aaron's thoughts, we'll get my thoughts, and everybody else's. None of that happens without a break. Right here, Tony Mack and the Triplets, 730, 103.9, The Ump.
WUMP Sports Radio, The Ump. I like the way you work it. No diggity.
about to bag it up. Bag it up. I like the way you work it. No diggity. No diggity.
Welcome back. Tony Mack and the Triplet here, 7:30, 103.9 The Ump. Just to wrap up this hour before we get into and have more time to get into all of the other really good stuff, let's touch back on our Crying Jordan Face of the Week, Butch Jones, the intern. Intern Butch at Alabama. A couple more people wanting to weigh in. Back on the Twitter window, does Butch Jones have upward mobility at Bama? I'm curious if he could ever be an on-the-field coach. Sure, I think so. I mean, I don't think Nick Saban has the gravitas and the pull to pull a move like that and not be ridiculed or you know, be publicly shamed. Because think back to the Lane Kiffin days. If anybody were to put Lane Kiffin as an offensive coordinator quickly or soon after he was fired from USC and all that stuff, whoever would have made that move would have caught a lot more flack for it than Nick Saban would have. I think Nick Saban get away with that. My wife actually texted me and said, Butch is getting to learn under the greatest coach of all time. I feel like that makes him desirable in a few years, at least for maybe a smaller or newer program. It's a good take. For a smaller or newer program, sure. Power Five, though? No way, because look at Lane Kiffin. Lane Kiffin was regarded as such a turd. I mean, nobody liked his attitude, but everybody respected what he could do on the field as a coach. Butch, I don't think he has that respect right now as what he can do as a coach. And Lane Kiffin had that respect as a coach, and he's only coaching FAU right now. So I don't think that there's any respect for Butch Jones to make a move right now. It's going to take some years for this to calm down, but do you think he could at least move up as an on-field coach at Alabama? Because I think so, for sure.
I think he could, for sure. I mean, he's as much of a laughingstock as he's become, he still has some credentials as a football coach at the Division I level, so
yeah,
for sure.
Aaron, pull up this bracket you had for me earlier. It's not an NCAA-related bracket, but I cannot wait to dive into this thing. My wife is going to flip out. Now, millennials, you are going to love this. If you're around mine and Aaron's age, you're going to really enjoy this because it's something from your childhood. Your parents might remember it well. So if you're old enough to be my parent, you're going to remember these movies. You may not have sat back and enjoyed them as much as we did. But Aaron, tell everybody a little bit about what you found today, your little gem you stumbled upon.
Yeah, it was literally I stumbled upon it this morning, just several minutes before our show started. I was looking on Twitter, and I don't check Twitter too often, except on a good bit on Saturday mornings, of course. And this was on my personal Twitter, and one of my friends had retweeted it, but he had replied to it, and it was a bracket of Disney and Pixar films. I think it's 32 movies in all, and it's got Disney movies, which are anywhere from Disney animated to Disney, CGI type movies, then Pixar on the other side. Completely, and it's got them. Doesn't seem to be really any seeding that was taking place. Just kind of, it looks like almost totally random matchups.
You can kind of make up seeds in your head. I'm sure like Lion King's a one if you want to do that. Toy Story's probably a one on the other side.
Yeah, there's 16 on each side. Well, I mean, they're not in any particular spot.
So tell us exactly what we got going on. What are some of the matchups on this?
Well,
thing?
Some of the matchups, I hate to see, the biggest matchup that stands out in my head, and it is a crime. It is an absolute crime. And see, I didn't make this. I just found it, and I think this could have been seeded completely different. A crime that these two are matched up in the first round, but it's Toy Story and Toy Story 2.
They got matched up together?
They got matched up against one another in the opening round.
See, you need to put like either Toy Story 1 or Toy Story 2. If you're going to put them up against another Toy Story movie, put it up against 3. All three of them are great, but I feel like I would pick 1 and 2 over 3.
That is so tough because, I mean, they get 100, 100, and a 99 on Rotten Tomatoes in that order, 1, 2, and 3, with 3 getting the 99. But 3, I think you're right. It is not quite as good as 1 and 2. But some of the aspects of 3, oh my goodness. Like, when one of my favorite parts of Toy Story 3 is when Woody comes back to Sunnyside.
Wow.
This is not a spoiler, but he comes back to Sunnyside and he's talking to that telephone, and the telephone is telling him how lucky he got to get out the first time and what all it's going to take to get out. And it literally will send chills down your spine at how and you know how difficult it is for them to get out.
Okay, so what are some of the other Toy Story? We got the Toy Story matchup.
Those
what
are
the
tough. For me, The Incredibles and WALL-E is a tough matchup. I would probably give the edge to The Incredibles, but I hate seeing those two matched up. The Lion King and Tarzan is extremely difficult as well. I'd once again give the edge to Lion King for sure, but I hate seeing that a difficult matchup for Tarzan right there in the opening round. For a lot of people, Tangled and Big Hero 6 in the opening round is another very difficult one.
Tangled and Big Hero 6?
Tangled and Big Hero 6.
I'm going to run through some of those you mentioned real quick, really plain and simple. I liked WALL-E. Incredibles, hands down, is better. Incredibles is better.
I would agree with you for the most part, because I think that Incredibles is better than WALL-E. But
how are you basing it? Are you basing it on like visually and different aspects like that? Maybe. But ultimately, when you're picking one movie over the other, which movie do you enjoy more? The movie easily I enjoyed more was The Incredibles.
I enjoyed Incredibles easily. More, but I'm trying to consider everything taking everything into consideration here. WALL-E, I think from a aesthetic aspect, as far as, you know, like the scenes that they created in WALL-E were fantastic, and the fact that there was so few dialogue for like half the movie with just him in it, and it's just, I don't know. I just enjoy the story.
What has more rewatchable value?
Incredibles does.
Absolutely. It's the better movie, man. It's a more enjoyable movie.
It's difficult to say, because there's a lot of movies that
Not
you wouldn't
me.
Watch
I'm saying
more
it right
than
now.
Once.
I love it way more.
I'm taking everything into consideration.
I mean, I can too, but there's some things that weigh more than the other. We'll be back more with this at the top of the hour right here. Tony Mack and the Triplets, 7:30, 103.9, The Ump. Stay tuned, everybody.
It's Tony Mack and the Triplets with your hosts Antonio McBeth and Aaron Triplett, specializing in the world of sports.
I think they're the best team in the country.
Covering your favorite teams.
Alabama wins!
Touchdown over!
And talking about whatever the hell they want.
Because he's a good coach! The good talent wants to play for him!
Absolutely not. This is ridiculous.
Now, here they are. Tony Mack and the Triplett.
Welcome back. Tony Mack and the Triplett here. There is a hostile environment going on over here between Aaron and I right now, because we are doing a bracket, looking at a bracket, and we just cannot agree. And it is a Disney-Pixar bracket. That's what it said. We didn't make it, but somebody put it out. It's really not seeded, but there are a bunch of matchups here. And I think all the confusion is coming between me and Aaron over here on the Pixar side, I believe, is where all the confusion is happening. I'm going to go over to the Disney side really quick, and look, guys.
I'm tweeting out, for those of you listening, I'm tweeting out the bracket, so please feel free to tweet us your thoughts.
Yeah, fill out your bracket. Tell us who wins certain matchups and everything else. I think the Disney side is really fun to look at, because you got Lion King versus Tarzan at the very top. That's really tough, because Tarzan is fantastic, one of my favorite Disney movies of all time, but Lion King...
It got an extremely tough draw.
Yeah, but Lion King is my favorite Disney movie of all time, so Lion King moves on.
But if you move down to the bottom of the Disney bracket is absolutely loaded.
Well, even the whole thing is Lilo and Stitch versus Princess and the Frog. My wife loves Princess and the Frog.
Well, if we're going to fill out our own, if we're going to try to decide on a winner of this thing, I'll agree with you on the Lion King.
Yeah.
So Lion King will move on there. I'll go Lilo and Stitch.
I will too. And it's tough. I like Princess the Frog, but I like Lilo and Stitch a lot.
I'll let Lilo and Stitch as well.
Big Hero 6 over
Tangled. Big Hero 6 over Tangled. And we might catch a lot of shade from a lot of people over that, but Big Hero 6 now is one of my favorite.
I feel like one of the toughest. Big Hero 6 is very good, but I feel like one of the toughest matchups right now in this tournament. Frozen and Moana.
Now, granted, I have not seen Moana. I have seen bits and pieces of it.
My wife liked it, but they told her she'd heard too much hype for it. That somebody told her that it was better than Frozen, and that bothered her a lot. And we watched it, and she didn't think so she kind of holds that against Moana a little bit. But she did like Moana, so I know my wife's going with Frozen. That's tough.
I'll go. I've seen some scenes from Moana. I haven't seen it all the way through, which I need to see.
If you've seen Frozen, take Frozen. I'm probably going to take Frozen,
I'll take
too.
Frozen, because Now, I think Frozen, one reason that I did not enjoy Frozen as much as I probably could have was everything that I heard about it before watching it.
Yeah.
Was everybody, of course, I've got the winner of this going out in the next round to Big Hero 6 anyway.
I like Frozen a lot. I'll tell you this. I like Frozen, but the hype around it, and I get it. I mean, there's a certain demographic it appeals to, and if you haven't seen it, at the end, it's supposed to be like, you know, true love can bring so-and-so back from her heart being frozen or whatever, and it turns out it wasn't a man. It was the love between her and her sister, a family-type deal, kind of empowering women. I get the demographic, but a movie that was my Frozen. I mean, Frozen was good, but I didn't connect to it on that level, obviously. I'm a 26-year-old dude, so I can't really connect to it on that level, but my Frozen that hit me and appealed to me in a cultural way was Coco. I know you haven't seen it yet, but me and my wife rented it like a week or so ago, and we bought it. We went and bought it right after that, and we watched it again. Probably going to watch it again this weekend because my mom's in town visiting, and she wants to see it. But
and that's on the Pixar side of the bracket, yeah, on the opposite side.
Oh, my gosh. It's absolutely incredible. But to keep going, try to go through this quickly because we got a big list to get to with the top 20 athletes. But even after that, Aladdin and Hercules.
Now, with this one,
that might be the toughest one for me.
Really? Hercules is enjoyable, but Aladdin, like, this is a sweep for me. And I like Hercules, but Aladdin is so good.
This is why it hurts, because I've tried to get my wife to like Hercules. She does not like Hercules. Hercules, again, is probably in my top 10 favorite Disney movies.
And I like Hercules. Aladdin, nothing wrong with the movie.
Aladdin is my second favorite Disney movie to Lion King. So I'm going with Aladdin there. Aladdin's so good.
My top three favorite Disney movies are on this list, and there's a collision course coming up in the quarterfinals for me that I can see that going to tear me apart.
You've got Aladdin, and a lot of people didn't know this, but just think about some of the cast that are in some of these movies. In Lion King, you got Matthew Broderick and guys like that, but in Aladdin, you have, obviously, Robin Williams. But you know who plays Aladdin?
Steve from
Full House.
From Full House, and his first name is Scott, and I can't pronounce his I don't remember what his last name is. It starts with a W. But yeah, Steve from Full House is Aladdin. So I've got Aladdin moving on there, and then you've got Little Mermaid and Pocahontas. Pocahontas, great song in Paint the Colors of the Wind, but it's totally historically inaccurate, and Little Mermaid is just better than Pocahontas. So I've got Little Mermaid moving on to play Aladdin in the next round.
I'll go with Little Mermaid for sure.
Yeah, easy pick there, Little Mermaid over Pocahontas.
It's hard to sound like a man doing sports radio when you're like, yeah, I'll take Little Mermaid. Little Mermaid's solid.
There's no shame whatsoever.
I'm going with Ariel.
My wife loves The Little Mermaid, and she actually, I give her credit for reinventing my appreciation for The Little Mermaid.
And don't hit the Twitter window or call with, yeah, Little Mermaid, Ariel's hot. Ariel's a hot mermaid. Look, that's weird. And I know people like that. There are people out there that think, like, Ariel's a hot animated character, or this animated character's hot. That's weird. That's weird to me. Stop it.
That's not the reason that we like these movies, believe.
No, absolutely not.
Completely.
To be honest with you, the reason why I'm picking Little Mermaid over Pocahontas, not the biggest Pocahontas fan. I really don't care for it.
It's not...
And remember, I have to go home to my wife after saying things like this. She just watched Pocahontas a couple weeks ago with me sitting at the house. I mean, she'd seen it before. She loves that movie.
It's not... It was right in the middle of that Disney Renaissance era, and it was probably their worst piece, easily, for sure.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest Pocahontas
fan.
And
Little Mermaid was the first one, and Little Mermaid was great. So moving on to the next one.
Now, I know where you're going on this one, because I know how much you love Zootopia.
And I love Mulan, but I've got... Zootopia is... Oh, my gosh.
Zootopia was really good.
I was blown away by Zootopia.
It was really good, but I think nostalgia factor with me is going to take over in this one, because Mulan came out when I was a kid. It's got Eddie Murphy as Mushu. Mulan's going to beat Zootopia for me based on the nostalgia factor. But because if I sit and think about it too long and I want to think about the animation and stuff like, because I love Jason Bateman. And
Zootopia was fantastic.
Zootopia was really good.
Now,
but I'm going Mulan.
Are we trying to go with a a bracket between the two of us.
I don't think we're ever going to write this. We could write it out after the show, but I think we're just kind of picking.
Now, what would move on? For me, Zootopia would move on there, and then the bottom, you've got Beauty and the Beast and The Nightmare Before Christmas. Now, this is the way I'm going to put this. This is the biggest ass kicking of this bracket, this matchup right here.
And I think it's Beauty and the Beast, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I figured you were going that way.
And here's a couple reasons why. The Nightmare Before Christmas, I can appreciate that for what it is. It's one of Tim Burton's probably one of his best. the
it's one of the ones the only song, ones that doesn't have Johnny Depp in it, which is crazy.
Yeah, and the song where he discovers Christmas Town, you know, I like that. I enjoy it.
It reminds
like,
me of my cat.
What's this? Yeah,
it reminds me of my cat. That's my cat. Yep. What's this? Mm-hmm. What's this? That's my cat. Whenever we bring a box into the house.
Yeah, so. And I can appreciate that for what it is, but I feel like The Nightmare Before Christmas only appeals to like a certain group. Like you have to have a certain taste in it to really love it. And The Beauty and the Beast is probably the greatest Disney movie of all time. I thought it was not my favorite, but it was in my top three.
I'm just
going
to go ahead and put
favorite.
It to you this way. We can't make a bracket together, like a consensus bracket between us, because The Lion King's going to beat Beauty and the Beast for me any day of the week.
And so.
Any day of the week. Lion King is my favorite Disney movie.
The Beauty and the Beast
time.
Was up for Best
Aladdin,
Picture, which is insane.
Aladdin is going to beat Beauty and the Beast for me.
So. Aladdin beat The Beauty and the Beast for me for a while, but the more I watch Beauty and the Beast.
I like Beauty and the Beast,
oh
but there
goodness.
Are so many more movies that I would watch over The Beauty and the Beast. If you put up Disney movies and I could only watch these Disney movies right here, and on this day I had to pick between, or on certain days I had to pick between this movie and Beauty and the Beast, this movie and Beauty and the Beast, this movie and Beauty and the Beast, 9 times out of 10, I'm going to watch Hercules over Beauty and the Beast. I'm going to watch Aladdin over Beauty and the Beast. I'm going to watch Tarzan, Lion King, Lilo and Stitch. I'll pick all of those over Beauty and the Beast. I like Beauty and the Beast a lot, and I'm not saying all those movies would beat it for me, but I'm going to watch those over that movie any day. Any day. Except maybe once. 1 out of 10.
All right, if we're going to track back through the Disney, and so next matchup in the next round, we had The Lion King and Lilo and Stitch, and Lion King moves on there.
For sure. God, yes.
Not even a debate there. You've got Big Hero 6 and Frozen. Big Hero 6 moves on for me, yeah. No question.
I'm going to go Big Hero 6, too. All the females listening, like my wife, probably the only one.
Big Hero 6 is better than Frozen.
You can probably change it now.
That picture of that guy that says, change my mind with the coffee, it's completely
Big
Hero.
I've only seen Big Hero 6 once, and I didn't want it. Whenever I sat down to watch it, there was another movie that I wanted to watch beside Big Hero 6. Me and my wife, I was kind of being a baby about it. We were sitting on the couch, and we decided to watch Big Hero 6 instead because there was a few people over. It wasn't at our house. And they decided on Big Hero 6. And I didn't really voice how much I didn't want to watch it, but I really didn't want to watch it. Blown away completely.
Yeah, Big Hero 6 blew me away, as did Zootopia. And if I had seen Big... I didn't see Big Hero 6 in theaters, but I saw Zootopia in theaters.
Oh, by
the way, if I'd have seen Big Hero 6 in theaters, it may have blown me away more than Zootopia.
She doesn't tweet in, but she does text me things we're talking about. My wife has a little thing to tell you about Zootopia. She told me about Pocahontas. She said, it's not the movie, it's the songs, which I think the songs in Pocahontas are overrated too. But she said, and Zootopia, in all caps, sucks.
Oh my goodness.
So, hey, there's a little input from her. I like Zootopia, not nearly as much as you did.
I love Zootopia.
Not nearly as much as you did.
But so we've got Aladdin and The Little Mermaid.
We sound like kids.
My wife's going to hate me, but Aladdin is better than The Little Mermaid.
Aladdin is better than The Little Mermaid. When you put...
My wife would have The Little Mermaid winning this whole thing, like,
Flounder
hands down.
If Flounder or Sebastian was played by Robin Williams, then we might have an argument here. But it wasn't. So
Aladdin moves on there. For me, it's Zootopia and Beauty and the Beast. And as much as I love Zootopia, it's not Beauty and the Beast. So Beauty and the Beast moves on there.
In that situation, yeah, Beauty and the Beast over Zootopia, for sure.
Yeah, easily. And so now you've got the semifinals of the Disney side. You've got Lion King and Big Hero 6. Lion King is better than Big Hero 6.
Yep. Going Lion King.
Bottom of the bracket, Aladdin and Beauty and the Beast. This is tough for me. For you personally,
Aladdin,
I know that you've got
and
Aladdin.
Beauty and the Beast. Yeah. Well, see, it's tough because, not only is Aladdin more appealing to me, is it more enjoyable to me? I think Beauty and the Beast is incredible, but it just, I don't know. I would pick Aladdin. I would watch Aladdin over it. That weighs to me more. I mean, and I feel like a movie is better if I would like to watch it more than the other one.
See, I don't know. See, I've become kind of... See, over the years, the way I've looked at movies is, even though like I wouldn't want to watch a movie a million times over, the rewatchability does not weigh as much to me as like the
initial
watch. Well,
the rewatchability it weighs to me because, in fact, the enjoyability of it. Like, if I enjoy a movie, I will want to rewatch it.
Of course, when the live action remake of Beauty and the Beast came out, I watched it in theaters. I went home and watched the original first. I went and watched the live action remake. I came home and I watched Beauty and the Beast again, probably three times, and then I watched the other one when it came out on Redbox. I love Beauty and the Beast, and I'm going to give it the...
I have it on DVD. The new one, I have it on DVD.
I'm going to give it the edge right here, but... Oh, it's really tearing me apart, honestly.
I'm going Aladdin. I mean...
No hard feelings whatsoever, but I'm going to go Beauty and the Beast here. I'm trying to think of that...
Is it because Belle's hot? Is it because you like animated Belle? Is that it? Or are you into the Beast? Because that's weird, but, I mean, we're all inclusive nowadays.
What I'm trying to do is a lot of it does weigh on the music, and a lot of it weighs on, like, how magical does this make me feel? And this sounds so gay. It sounds...
Easy.
It sounds... It sounds so...
What are we doing here? It makes you sound like a kid.
It does make me sound very childish.
It makes you sound like a kid.
It makes me sound very childish.
I feel magical with the song.
Magical.
I was really thinking how stupid it sounds. Aladdin is based on magic, too. So, I mean,
it is magic carpet. You have
genie.
To sound. You want it to sound magical.
But these are kids' movies. That's how you feel when you watch them.
And you want those.
So I get it.
And with me. I'm getting way too into this.
Yeah, so we're going to go and stop it there. We're not going to give you a champion here on the air. We are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, top 20 athletes.
We didn't get to the Pixar side.
No, we're not going to get to the Pixar side, Aaron, because we're putting too much into this.
Yes, we are.
But we can always fill out this bracket and put it out later if you want to. But we have a big list we have to get to because, according to Sports Illustrated, they have their, and I got to read this the way they have it, because it's not just, it's called the Dominant 20, but it says, the magazine's 20th anniversary, we present the definitive 20 for 20, definitive 2020, 20 for 20, the most formidable, awe-inspiring, and downright dominant athletes of the past two decades. Put them in order. And I'm just going to spoiler alert right now before we go to break. Number 20, dead last on the list, Tom Brady. Tony Mack and the Triplets, 730, 103.9 The Ump. You'll want to stay tuned for this one.
Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Ump. WUMP.
Welcome back, everybody. Tony Mack and the Triplet. We're going to try to beef this up a little bit here and get out of the Disney talk and the incorrect way politically to say words on the radio. But we're going to get back into this thing. Again, you did not hear me wrong before we went to break there. According to ESPN the magazine, it is their 20th anniversary, and they present to us the definitive 20 for 20, the most formidable, awe-inspiring, and downright dominant athletes of the past two decades, in order. And number 20, dead last on this list, is Tom Brady. So without further ado, Aaron, what in the hell are these guys smoking?
You know, you look at this list, and you see some of the places of some of these individuals. And you wonder,
agenda pushing might come across your mind when you see some of this stuff?
You could, and I don't understand. For one, the glaring problem is Tom Brady's way too low.
Way too low. I don't have a problem with 1 through 3, though. I mean, you could put some other guys in there and mix up a top five, but these guys being as high as they are, I'm okay with.
Yeah, number 1, 2, and 3 in order are Tiger Woods, LeBron James, and Peyton Manning.
I'm okay with that. Yeah.
I'm not okay with the distance put in between Peyton and Brady, 3 to 20. Jimmy Johnson is sitting at number 4. Now, I know that you have a bigger problem with Jimmy Johnson sitting at 4 than I do. Here's my thing. Jimmy Johnson should not be 4 on this list. However, I am understanding of his ranking at number 4. His dominance in NASCAR driving in a sport that you're really not supposed to dominate. He won 5 straight championships. And now, since the times have changed, if you look at racing, way back when, Richard Petty's total wins will never be matched. They'll never be matched. Nobody will ever catch Richard Petty in wins. However, back then, when your team could afford to spend the money to beef up the cars and all that, you could. Your cars could be better. Nowadays, the cars are the same, essentially. Under the hood, the cars are the same. The bodies are made differently by, you know, the different car companies, but the engines are the same. And he won 5 straight championships on an even playing field in a sport that's not supposed to be dominated, It's unheard of.
In the world of NASCAR, sure. I mean, he is.
But like I said, I'm defending his dominance. Should he be
the fact that he should be on the list? Yes,
the
agree.
Fact that he should be on the list. Yes, he should probably. He's in mind. I would have him in the top 10.
And this
to be
is
totally
in the last 20 years, I believe, as well. And I agree he should be up here in this list. But the fact that he's number 4 and Roger Federer is behind him at 5 is a joke.
It is a joke.
Formidable is the word that comes to me when you're talking about Jimmy Johnson, because he was dominant in his sport. He's the guy in that sport you look at and like, God, he's hard to beat. But when you compare that dominance to another person's dominance in their respected sport, I respect those other sports more than I respect NASCAR. So football player, the majority of the football players on this list, the tennis guys on this list, well, the top ones like Fed. And Floyd, Lionel Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo, those guys get the nod over Jimmy Johnson, in my opinion. I'm not really a soccer guy either, but I just respect those sports. It's tougher to be dominant in those sports, in my opinion. It's more physically exhausting to be as dominant as they are in those sports as it is in NASCAR. And that means more to me. So that's why that they wouldn't on my list. And that's not really the agenda pushing deal I'm talking about here. Again, on this list, we're scrolling through here. Number 6 is a female golfer. Michael Schumacher is number 7. He's a Formula One driver. Why in the world is he in the top 10? Over he's one spot over Floyd Mayweather. Again, ridiculous. But something else I'm on here. Marta's number 9. Agree with her being up there. Dominant female soccer player. No problem with that. I'm not against women being on this list. And I want to assert that and you guys to hear that. Because of who is on this list over some of these guys. Number 13. Number 13 is Lauren Jackson. She's a WNBA player, and she was the fastest and youngest female player to hit the 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, and 5,000 mark in points. She did a bunch of crazy stuff. She had like three 40-point games or something like that, or she cracked the 40% threshold 3 times in her career. Okay. The reason why, and she's one spot above Cristiano Ronaldo. She's obviously above Tom Brady in this list. She's above Novak Djokovic. She made the list over some of Aaron's snubs, which I agree with him. Lauren Jackson made the list at, what, 14 or 13? And just remember, guys like Michael Phelps are not on this list. And Rafael Nadal, not on this list. But a WNBA player where... Okay, Serena is on this list too. And if you were comparing her to professional men's tennis players, sure, she would be stomped. The athleticism that men have over women, the dominant athleticism and endurance men have over women, there's no question. It's a scientific fact that men are just more athletically dominant. But that's a little different. You're comparing a professional tennis player to a professional men's tennis player to a professional women's tennis player. What I'm about to say, Lauren Jackson, WNBA player, you can take a college basketball team. And I don't mean a good one. I don't mean one that made the tournament. You can take a team, a Power 5 team, like Washington from a year ago that had Markelle Fultz on it. They won 9 games? 9, 10, or 11 games? You could take a team that barely won double-digit games in college basketball. College basketball. And they can play the WNBA champion. They can play them one game, or you can put them in a series of 7 or whatever. They kick the crap out of the WNBA players. I'm sorry. That's just how it is. They're faster. They have more endurance. They're more physical. They're more athletic. They can outshoot, outjump, outrun. That's just how they're built. And the fact that you have a WNBA player over Tom Brady, the greatest quarterback of all time, some of the greatest tennis players of all time, and some of the greatest soccer players of all time, is a joke. And that tells me there's an agenda to be pushed. Be fair. I mean, it might sound like I'm being sexist, but I'm just being fair to my heart. And I don't honestly believe that's a genuine ranking.
Some of these I don't understand. One of the biggest problems that I had with the list is the fact that Mike Trout is on here, period. Mike Trout should not be on this list. Yes, his numbers are good, but his career is so far from being done. Like, it's too early to know how good he's going to be over time. And he's I know that it's a team sport, but they've only made the playoffs, one time since he's been there? And I don't even think they've won a playoff series. Like, I don't even understand why he's on there. And Tom Brady being at 20 is a joke. The biggest snub on this list, or actually, the biggest snub from this list is Michael Phelps. He's the biggest snub from this list. The second is probably Nadal because of the fact that Djokovic is on here. Now, they bring up some really good points. Djokovic's argument for being on this list is probably one of the more valid that I see because you can directly compare him to somebody who's on this list at 5 in Federer and someone who's not on this list who should be in Nadal. They actually give him a valid reason for being on here. Do I think he should be on here? Yes. Do I think he should be above Nadal? Absolutely not. Do I think Nadal should be on this list? Absolutely yes. Now, I will admit, some of these, it's hard for me to judge personally because I don't. The only thing I know about said individual is what I read in this little tidbit. Like Allyson Felix, I don't really know anything about her except for what I read right here. Yes, that is impressive. With all her medals in track. Yes, that is extremely impressive. But is that more impressive than what Michael Phelps did in swimming over the last 20 years? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I mean, Phelps is the most decorated Olympian of all time, and there's two.
And is it more awe-inspiring? No, it's not. And Michael Phelps did it in the Olympics. It was patriotic.
There's two Olympians on here who are not him, and he's the most decorated of all time, and Usain Bolt should be higher on this list, in my opinion. He's only at number 10. I mean, this guy is the fastest human being that has ever lived. The fastest human being who's ever lived. He's been entered in 21 events, and he's won 20 of them. The only one that he didn't win was the one where he had that false start and got disqualified. That's the only one that he did not win. And he's broken his own world record, and he's broken world records when he actually could have probably been faster. When he started celebrating at the end, it set a world record. The guy should be higher on this list. Definitely higher than the likes of Annika Sorenstam and Michael Schumacher, that is for sure.
No.
And that's no disrespect to women's golf or Formula One racing, but I think the fastest human being alive and the most decorated Olympian of all time should be above those people.
It's just more impressive, in my opinion. And there are some controversial figures on here. I agree with the Mike Trout thing. What he's done at this point, he's, 26 or something like that? He missed the majority of last season, or a big chunk of it anyway. But I mean, his career and his numbers up until this point are unbelievable. Unbelievable. But his career is far too incomplete for him to be on this list. Over the last 20 years, we're talking the most dominant athletes the last 20 years. You're talking about guys who have careers as long as Tiger Woods, LeBron James, Peyton Manning,
Tom Brady.
And we're talking about a 25-year-old baseball player. Not buying that one.
I'm not buying into that one bit. And the fact that
number 17 on this list is controversial as well. The fact that Barry Bonds is on the list, that just depends. It just depends on where you stand with the whole doping thing in baseball. You know, being jacked up on all those things. I'm really not going to talk about that too much because I don't. You know what I mean? I'm torn too. I mean, Barry Bonds, if you're just looking at what he, living in the moment of when he was doing all this stuff, there wasn't anything more exciting and more fun to watch.
I mean, Colin Cowherd came up. I was watching him because I had seen two different segments on this list. They had it on First Take, and there was some controversy. They were talking about it, and then Cowherd talked about it himself, and he gave his top 10 list, which is completely different than this. He had Floyd Mayweather number 1. I think he had Usain Bolt at 2, Michael Phelps at 3, Serena at 4, and Roger Federer at 5. So Federer was the only one who didn't really move places. He had Barry Bonds at 10, and he said, you can hate me for this or what, and whatever you feel like it's just, he just kind of left the steroid thing up to you. He brought up some valid points, which, for example, one of them was when you talk to major league pitchers who pitched during the time of Barry Bonds, Bonds didn't have an out pitch, apparently. Like, you have, against all batters, especially the good ones, there's one pitch that can strike them out. And, you know, whether it's the high and inside or out wide, away, low, whatever. There was a placement and a type of pitch can strike somebody out. They said Bonds didn't have one. You could throw anything at him. He has a chance to hit it out of the park every time. And he's one of the only – I think he might have said he's the only person in – baseball history to be intentionally walked with the bases loaded. I mean, intentionally walk with the bases loaded. I mean,
his face on that during the at-bats, priceless.
A pitcher weighs the options, and he decides that the best option facing Barry Bonds is to intentionally walk someone and give up a run guaranteed instead of pitch to Barry
Bonds.
That goes to
number one, being dominant. That goes to being formidable because you're, like, inspiring fear in somebody. And it's insane. And some of these words don't apply to all the athletes. Like, there's just one word that would apply. Like, Floyd Mayweather, dominant is what you think of when you think of Floyd because of how defensive dominant he was. Inspiring, maybe not.
I think of – here's a lot of the things, at least, that I consider on this list. There's a knock that you can almost give to every individual on this list. You've got – well, Tiger Woods. Yes, his 11 years before this last 9 years was the most dominant we've ever seen in golf. But he, you know, he had all that stuff come out about his personal life, and then he's been battling some injuries, you know, and he never really reached that peak of what people judge him on a higher level, unfairly probably, than most of the other golfers on tour. LeBron, of course, his record in finals is not very good. Of course, he's come up. I mean, last year he played probably the most dominant potential NBA team that we've probably ever seen. Not in any fault of his own. Peyton Manning, you know, he struggled to win in the playoffs at times. I mean, the guy won 2 Super Bowls. He made it to 4. But, you know, he doesn't have Brady's track record in the playoffs, but yet his stats are, you know, will blow your mind. You know, you've got Jimmy Johnson. Yeah, he just races cars, but there's a lot of tactical skills that go into that. Federer, you know, he's come up in a time where he just happened to, you know, go up against Nadal and Djokovic in probably the greatest era, I mean, in what is the greatest era of men's tennis ever. One reason I think Nadal is not on this list is most of his dominance comes on clay, and that can be taken both ways. You know, he's the most dominant tennis player ever we've ever seen on clay, but yet it's only clay. It's not the whole, not on the whole sport.
Injuries have battled him, too.
Injuries have gotten him as well. And for Floyd, I think one thing you could knock on Floyd is he didn't fight Pacquiao when they were both, you know.
He missed a few boxers in their primes.
In the primes. And that's smart by him. You know, he did that on purpose. You know, he avoided, you know, he played it the best way, you know, for him not to lose.
Right.
Which.
I like the Tiger-LeBron debate. That's fun to me because
I'm good with those at 1 and 2.
Me too. I mean, you look back at Tiger's 11 years that he dominated and how just ridiculous those numbers are. He was averaging like almost 6 wins a year and stuff like that. I mean, and as many good golfers as there are out there, when you're winning like that, you're preventing other guys from winning. And I understand the knock on him the 9 years after that, but how dominant those 11 years were are insanely tough to beat. LeBron's how he's able to be better now at 30 something years old.
I mean, he's having his best season probably ever.
When he was like in his prime is ridiculous, and he's defining a new age for your prime. But something that weighs on me with LeBron, it's really not the finals record. I understand that when you get there, that the better team has gotten the best of Cleveland. The better team has beaten the better player. But the thing that bothers me the most, and it not necessarily LeBron's fault. He's had the chance to go to the West if he wanted to, but it's not really his fault. It's his path to the finals that I think that gets me, because people want to compare him to Michael, and I saw this on Twitter the other day. Someone wanted to compare Michael's finals to LeBron's finals, saying LeBron's easily faced tougher opponents in the finals. Sure. But Michael's had tougher playoffs, hands down, than LeBron has. Because think of the guys and the teams Michael had to go through to get to the finals. He went through the era where the Bad Boys were playing in Detroit. I mean, hell, in the 80s, before he made it to the finals, he was having to go through Larry Bird and the Celtics in the East. I mean, he didn't quite make it through them, but I mean, he just as easily, if he was in the West, could have faced them in the finals. You know what I mean? He still had tough opponents. It just so happens LeBron's tough opponent in the East these last 7 years doesn't come, or that his toughest opponent doesn't come until the finals. Michael was going through NBA legends year in and year out just to get to the finals. I mean, he had to play Charles Barkley and all kinds of NBA, not just NBA Hall of Famers, NBA legends, just to get to the finals. So that's always been a knock on me for LeBron. His path there has always been really easy. I can sympathize with him on who he plays in the finals, because ultimately, when you face a better team, that they're going to get the better. Most of the time, they're in a 7-game series. They'll get the better of the better player. They'll get the best of the better player. So, I do have sympathy for LeBron when he gets to the finals, and his finals record sucks. But it's his path that's been far too easy. Because if he's had to play in the West, if this Cleveland team was in the West, his Cleveland team in the past few years with Kyrie and stuff, if they were in the West, and let's say just put Golden State and East, let's flip-flop those two teams. Golden State dominates there in the finals. Number one, does Cleveland get to the finals? Are they as well-rested and as healthy to compete? You know what I mean? It's just so easy for him in the East and the rest of his team, too, especially when they had Kyrie. So,
and you make some valid points there, and I can agree with that for sure. And now looking at some of the other ones, like he brought up a coward did the other day. He had Messi in his top 10. I think Messi sat at 8, I believe.
Messi's 11.
Messi's 11 on the actual list,
which coward, is a sham.
Coward had him at 8, and here's where I sit on Messi. I used to think that Messi was hands down 100%, not even questioned, better than Cristiano Ronaldo. I think he is better than Cristiano Ronaldo, but I don't think it's as clear cut as once was. Now, Messi's big knock is that he has not won a World Cup with Argentina, and he got him all the way to the finals. And I remember watching this game. He didn't play the best game, but he had a free kick in extra time down 1-0. Yes, I bring this up every time that I'm talking about it, and it was the level of difficulty on this free kick was absurd. Like, it would have taken, you know, a god to make this free kick to score in the 122nd minute of the World Cup. But if anybody was going to do that, it's him. It was, and not only did he not come close, it was awful. It was a botched free kick. And then, of course, in the I want to say it was Copa America, he crumbled and missed a penalty kick. And he just hasn't played well on an international stage at times. And the knock on him and Ronaldo that Coward brought up, he says that La Liga is the best league in the world. Not the most popular, it's the Premier League in England, but it's the best. I don't agree with that. La Liga is only, they only have two teams, two and a half, because Atletico Madrid is pretty good. But they've built these two super teams. I mean, have you seen who's on Messi's roster other than Messi? It is absurd. And Ronaldo, the other guys on Real Madrid, absurd. The amount of money that they spend on other players. And so that's also a knock, is they're on the two best teams by far in this one league where they just dominate. And
you got to look at, and I get that, but you also have to weigh in the fact that, I mean, you're so used to soccer because you like soccer, but think about what their sport requires of them.
Oh, absolutely.
Compared to the sports above them. And I understand you're just trying to be fair.
I think that there's something on this list to everyone that you can try find something to knock. And mine is their competition in their respective leagues outside of those two teams is not great.
Sure.
And but I will say this, they built these super teams and they've come up and they win Champions League every year. It's these two teams. And it's what baffles me is the goal scoring by both of these individuals.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
It's unbelievable how many goals these two guys score. I mean, Messi averages almost a goal a game for his entire career. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, considering when you think about soccer, there are games that end with no goals.
Exactly.
A lot of the time. And now, for me, I obviously, we're thinking about the last 20 years, and you look at these athletes, they all have a place in the most dominant in their sport. Because this isn't just the most dominant, the top 20 in the NFL or the top 20 in the NBA. They're plucking guys from all sports and putting them into a top 20 list. Now, I think it's their responsibility, and that's my biggest knock with this list. Now it's your responsibility to not only put these athletes on this paper, on this list, but it's your responsibility to now rank their sport pretty much too, and because that has a lot to do with it with me.
I agree. Because I think there's a lot of it that has to do with how difficult your sport.
All of their numbers are eye popping on this list when you think about their sport. Now it's like, okay, is this eye popping stat or this eye popping dominance and athleticism and what you were able to do in this sport? What does that mean compared to soccer? Like, I'm sorry, but the WNBA, do you even hold a candle? Does that even hold a candle to what Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo can do in the sport of soccer? And how you see how athletic and how ridiculously fit you have to be to play soccer.
And
it just doesn't hold a candle.
And it's you got to look at the context of times as well. It's not only what's the degree of difficulty in your sport, number one, but who else is playing during that time frame. You have to look and see who else is dominating. Like Federer, that's why I agree with his spot at 5. That's where I would keep him at 5. Because you look at the time that he's been playing. I mean, he was number one in the world in 2004. He's number one right now. That doesn't happen. And you look at it's the greatest era of tennis with him, Nadal, Djokovic. You know, the greatest era of tennis. That's tough. Serena, who's won, you know, 24, I think, Grand Slams. But look at and she's great. Like, she is the best female tennis player of all time, without question. I don't think you can even debate it. There's been some great ladies play on the NWTA, but other than her sister,
the competition's
who's going to go down as who's going to go down as an all-time great? When you look back at, you know, you had Navratilova and Chris Everett played each other in tons of finals. I mean, those were two of the all-time great women ever. And now, other than her sister, who's going to go down as an all-time great, she's won, I think, about 7 or 8, not near as much as many as she has. There's not much competition outside. And when she's healthy and when she's playing her best, there's not a woman on tour that can beat her. So she's kind of come up in an era where she's been, you know, but then again, you can look at it as she's keeping these other women from winning major titles, right, kind of the way Tiger Woods did it when he was in his prime. So you don't know.
It's a little different there.
A little different there.
Because with Tiger doing it, Tiger isn't like hitting a ball to them and they're hitting it back, and you know what I mean?
He's playing against, you know, 70 other guys in a field, right, and she's playing against one at a time. You know,
it's so different.
Exactly. It's varying games.
And it just comes to, and like I said, it comes to how you view a sport, and obviously how I view the dominance, or how I view how I respect the game of soccer so much more than other sports on this list is obviously different than the way that people at ESPN the magazine do, because they obviously like a little WNBA. They weigh that way heavier than I do. So, I mean, it's just...
And, I mean, me personally, you know, I played tennis for 4 years in college. I'm going to weigh those because I know what it takes to go. I mean...
Oh, sure.
It's a mental game. It's as mentally demanding as it is physically. And to have... And to be so dominant for be number one in 2004 and to be number one now, to win 20 Grand Slams in the toughest era of men's tennis ever, that's so impressive.
If I'm trying to pick a top five, to be honest with you, off the top of my head, the top five dominant athletes that I think of, I'm sorry, Peyton, and I'm sorry, Brady. I like them a lot, but I don't think that when I first initially think of this list and then think of making my top five, I don't put them in the top five. I like not in any particular order, but I like Tiger, I like LeBron, I like Federer, I like Phelps, and oh my gosh, I just let the last one slip out of my head. But I mean, I'm not going to be able to think of it right now. But I like Fed a lot. Messi. Messi would be my top five.
See, another thing is when you're talking about football. Once again, it goes back to what we talked about earlier. It's the ultimate team sport,
right?
You know,
Manning benefits as much from his receivers and everybody else being good as much as his teammates benefit from him being good.
I mean, Dan Marino was one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, but he never won a Super Bowl. And Dan Marino had passing league number, like today's, his numbers stack up to today's game.
He was the only quarterback until Breeze that could throw, that threw for 5,000.
Before it was a pass, they were a passing team before it was a passing league, because it's a passing league now, and he was doing it before that. But because, you know, you didn't have the people around him, the team, he didn't win any Super Bowls. I think he may have only went to one in his entire career. I think it was in his second year. And, you know, so that's a testament to it being the ultimate team sport. And, I mean, and Brady, I can understand why he's number 20 on this list. But when you put Peyton at 3, I don't understand it. But if you're going to rank Brady lower than Peyton, I get it. Fine, but there's been so much more stability on Brady's side. You know, he's had the same coach. That's the greatest NFL coach of all time, who does the greatest with person. I'm not docking Brady at all, but it's been the great, and his organization. It's a good organization. Kraft is a good owner. He makes the right decisions. It's a good organization. He's got a great coach. So all that kind of factors in, and once again, it being the ultimate team sport. So, I mean, that's why it's hard to rank quarterbacks, I think, so high on the list.
In between Peyton and Brady on this list, you have a WNBA, a Formula One, and a NASCAR driver, and a couple track stars, female and male, in between them. And it's weird. It's weird. I don't understand that either. I'm not saying just because Manning's 3, put Brady at 4, Brady at 2. Just saying that's totally different. If you're weighing the dominance, because they're so close and what they were able to do, you can't say just because, like, well, Manning has a couple more touchdowns or a couple more passing yards than Brady does. So he's ranked above him. But the difference in those couple yards and couple touchdowns is 17 places on this list. That's a little absurd to me. So, but just all the things that are in between those two on the list is absurd. You could easily put Brady. But, I mean, Mike Trout, whose career is far more incomplete than Tom Brady's, is ahead of Tom Brady. It's dumb.
Yeah.
The thing is, I'm not trying to crap on this list and say, oh, throw it out. It's stupid. I think it could be reworked, and I like the people that are on it. But, man, this was a weird read. Because when you showed this to me yesterday, I read 1, 2, and 3. I was like, wow, this is awesome. And then I immediately saw number 4. I was like, what? Jimmy Johnson, number 4? And Brady, and I already knew Brady was 20. And then I keep scrolling, and I'm like, what? WNBA?
Mind-boggling. And I was sitting there because, you know, out beside each one, if you look up this list, for example, Tiger Woods has a dominance rating of 17. LeBron has a dominance rating of 15.6. I'm like, where do they get this number? So I clicked up on the top of this link to this article. It says, backed by foolproof math. It says, we used our unpatented five-step process to determine the most dominant athletes of the past 20 years. First, we looked at the top league in every sport that has global annual revenues of $100 million or more and for which there are reliable annual overall rankings or ratings of individual athletes for all or most of the past 20 years. We rated those sports athletes in each of the past 20 regular seasons by the single performance metric available. By the best single performance metric available, adjusted these ratings to normalize athlete scores in each sport across time, narrowed our focus to the top 4 athletes in each year in every sport, then adjusted the data again to put these players across sports on a common baseline. Then we added up the results to achieve this list in which one dominance share equals one standard deviation of performance by an athlete beyond the top 4 players in his or her sport for one season. Which, needless to say, I didn't hardly understand a bit of what I just read. It was extremely, like, the way they, in my opinion, that's extremely difficult. It's like they made a list of apples and oranges and tried to
rank them
together. And it's, like I said, I don't quite understand some of it.
Again, to me, it sounds like they have a people at the ESPN magazine, and you know ESPN to be leaning a certain way when it comes to political ways and how much they let certain people that believe what they believe get away with things on TV than they do people that believe the opposite get away. So it sounds to me like there might have been a little bit of agenda pushing in this list, and they tried to make up a math formula to back it up.
I'm not sure. I don't know. And I guess because a lot of it is, for me, is I don't know a lot about some of these, or at least the WNBA,
and that's why
why
I've stayed away from the women's golf, and that's why I've stayed away from the women's track. I don't know much about all of that stuff, and I respect MARTA because it's women's soccer, but it's still soccer, and that's a tough sport. But I know a lot about basketball. I know quite a bit about basketball, and I know how much tougher, and how much, and it. The difference between men and women's basketball. I know the difference between that and how it's nowhere close. It's nowhere in the same league. And the fact that a WNBA player up there bothers me. And I'm not trying to be sexist because Serena absolutely deserves to be high up on this list. Marta, respect women's soccer. I don't respect the WNBA that much compared to these other sports. I don't. I don't have a big problem with that. But we have to get a break. When we come back, we'll wrap this show up right here. Tony Mack and the Triplets, 730, 103.9, The Ump.
Sports Radio 730 and 103.9, The Ump. WUMP.
Welcome back. Tony Mack and the Triplet here, 730, 103.9, The Ump. Just enough time to tell everybody thank you for joining us. We're back. Aaron, how great did it feel to finally be back?
It felt good. It felt nice to, you know, come out here and, you know, it was really enjoyable. It's been like a month, so it was good.
Oh, my gosh, it was. It was fantastic. We hope you guys enjoyed it as well. Of course, you can always follow us on Twitter, at Tony Mack Triplet, at Tony Mack UMP, at A Trip Tennis. Just go to the Tony Mack Triplet Twitter, hit the follow button, and then in the bio you can find my Twitter and you can find Aaron's Twitter there as well, and you can go one-stop shop, follow us. Again, we appreciate everything. Thanks for listening. See you next week.